It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Today is Wednesday, December 4th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The ferry Leconte will return to service at least a day later than expected. Alaska Marine Highway officials say Thursday sailings have been canceled due to ongoing bow thruster repairs. That was the day it was expected to sail again. The Leconte is expected to complete sea trials late today. If it passes, the ferry will then head back to Juneau, where it's based. Officials say service could begin Friday. The vessel has been off its schedule since the day before Thanksgiving. The Leconte is the only ferry serving Gustavus, Hoonah, Tenneke Springs, and Angoon. It also sails to Haines and Skagway, which are also served by the ferry Taku. A family dog is safe and sound, but a deer is dead after an unconventional rescue operation in Sitka yesterday morning. The dog had chased the deer out onto frozen Thimbleberry Lake when both fell through the ice. The dog's owner called Sitka Mountain Rescue. This is Search and Rescue Captain Don Cluding.
You know, there's an open area in the water where there was no ice and, you know, really thin ice where the deer and dog had ventured out onto and fallen through, and it, you know, looks like the dog was chasing the deer and they ended up out and both fell in the water.
By that time, the deer had drowned, but the dog was still swimming, and Cluding got a chance to practice ice rescue techniques typically meant for humans.
Gerald Gangle and I were able to make a decision that we could safely do this and that there was low risk to the rescuers.
Search and rescue team member Gerald Gangle held a cable fastened to Cluding as Cluding, dressed in a dry suit, ventured out onto the ice.
Broke through the ice, on the way out and ended up wading up, you know, to chest deep water and were able to grab the dog and, you know, get it back on the shore.
When the dog reached shore, it was hypothermic but able to run to its owner, and it had completely recovered at home within the hour. Cluding says this was a surprise considering the circumstances.
The owners suggested that it had been in the water for about an hour, which is pretty phenomenal, actually, that the deer succumbed to hypothermia.
Cluding and Gangle also retrieved the deer, a large buck, and donated it to hunters after checking with Alaska wildlife troopers.
You know, our main concern at that point was, you know, if we can safely recover the deer, you know, that's number one, we want to safely recover it if at all possible. And then number two, we want to make sure that the meat is not wasted and that it's salvaged and utilized.
Cluding says the dog's owner was thrilled that the team was able to save her family member. Community members from towns across Alaska are in Juneau for the second annual Prevention Summit, sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The council is under the State Department of Public Safety. Council Executive Director Lori Morton says the three-day summit at Juneau's Centennial Hall brings together teams from 19 communities. Each team has at least three members.
There are victim service providers, first responders, such as maybe law enforcement or health care providers, tribal representatives, as well as just people interested in preventing violence in their community.
Teams will be working on strengthening existing prevention strategies and developing new ones.
It's an opportunity for communities across the state to get together and talk to each other about what is working and what else they want to do to prevent domestic violence and sexual assault.
The summit features presenters from around the state and outside the state, many who are experts in their field. One of the workshops will be with Green Dot, a national nonprofit organization working with several communities in Alaska on an intervention program. Morton says youth from Juneau and Sitka will also be highlighted at the summit.
Young adults who are actually implementing strategies in their high schools on reducing violence.
First Lady Sandy Parnell kicked off the summit yesterday. According to Morton, the summit is the cornerstone of the council's efforts to support the important work of violence prevention. Speaking an endangered language at home is the essence of language revitalization, according to author Leanne Hinton. She's written the book, Bringing Our Languages Home, and was recently in Juneau for a Tlingit conference. Lisa Fu spoke with Hinton and a Juneau mother who's trying it out.
Misha Jackson and her husband are speaking Tlingit to their 10-month-old baby, Michaelin.
We do little words and phrases and commands at home and try to expose her as much as she can to the elders that speak conversationally so she can just hear it. She loves to hear it, so It gets her attention better than English does.
Jackson herself doesn't speak the language well. Her family has roots in Klukwan, but Jackson grew up in Anchorage, then lived in Southern California. Her mother taught her Tlingit songs, and that's about it. By speaking Tlingit at home, Jackson wants to give her daughter something she didn't have. Jackson's husband, on the other hand, was exposed to the language growing up in Cake.
Her dad got to listen to his grandparents, and he's a much better speaker because of it, whereas for me, it's I can't make the same sounds as easily as he can, so I know it makes a huge difference.
Jackson is doing exactly what Leanne Hinton recommends for parents who may not speak a language but want to make it a part of their home.
All it really takes is dedication to the language. It doesn't even take fluency because you can be learning with your children. Like many of the families I know started from scratch when their children were already born. And as they learned, they were bringing it home bit by bit and making it more and more the language of their home.
Hinton is Professor Emeritus of Language at the University of California, Berkeley. She specialized in American Indian languages, sociolinguistics, and language loss and revival. She's written a number of books on keeping endangered languages alive and says speaking the native language at home is the key. Home, she says, is the last place where it disappeared.
To get it back into the home again is the one time that the language is actually going to become naturally acquired again by children so that actual native speakers are occurring. Once people are learning it at home and using it, then you feel like you're beginning to be out of danger for the language.
Hinton says ideally, parents would only speak the endangered language at home, but that's usually not the case.
Most of the people that I've interviewed are lucky if they use it 50% of the time. And 50% of time is actually a fairly good ratio, but you want more for an endangered language if possible.
Parents like Jackson, who speak their native language at home, will likely face some challenges when their children go to school and their peers and teachers are speaking English. Hinton says children may then refuse to speak the native language at home, but there are ways to tackle this problem.
One way is to start trying to talk about how important it is to use the language, but that may not go over with a five-year-old. Some parents just simply won't respond to their kids if the kids talk to them in English. They'll talk to the kids in their endangered language, and if the kids talk back in English, they'll just say, I don't understand. Sometimes that works quite well.
Another option is making language a game. Imagine jars with pennies inside. Every family member gets one. If a person catches another saying something in English that could be said in their indigenous language, that person gets to take a penny out of the other's jar and put it into their own jar. At this point, Jackson doesn't have to worry about those challenges yet. She says her daughter, Michaelyn, isn't saying much in English or in Tlingit.
Every once in a while we laugh because it sounds like she says kla, like she's saying hakla. So we crack up whenever she does that.
That's Tlingit for gee whiz. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And the Alaska State Museum in Juneau is getting a lot of help from other Alaska museums ahead of its move to a new facility in 2016. As the staff works to pack up the more than 32,000 artifacts in its collection, museum professionals from around the state are lending a hand and learning what it takes to safely store and transport priceless historical objects. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
In the basement of the Alaska State Museum, Eva Malvich uses a box cutter to slice a thin piece of gray cardboard into a small rectangle. Mounted on the cardboard, supported by four pieces of foam, is a makeup brush with an ornately carved metal handle. Malvich doesn't know much about the brush except that it came from a woman who collected items for her vanity.
But then, you know, with objects, you have to preserve them forever.
Malvich is director of the tribally owned Yupik Pajarialite Museum in Bethel. The name means the people's way of living.
We're the only museum in the Delta.
After a career in public administration, Malvich started working at the museum about a year ago. She had no practical experience, so she's learning the best way to handle and preserve objects. She points to a piece of cardboard like the one on which she just mounted the makeup brush.
I used to wonder what the heck this was. So we have boxes of this. I used to think, why do I have so much cardboard? Now I know it's called blueboard, and it's useful for making containers for my objects.
Malvich is learning under the direction of husband and wife team Scott and Ellen Carley. Ellen is the Alaska State Museum conservator. Scott is curator of museum services. His job is to assist and advise other museums and historical societies throughout the state.
I help them with projects that they're working on. I help them get grants. I actually have a small grant that I can give out to help them do projects. I can do assessments.
Carley says other Alaska museum professionals had been asking him how the museum planned to move its collection to a new state library, archives, and museum building scheduled to open in 2016. That's how he got the idea to bring them to Juneau to see it firsthand.
We're calling them EXOs because outside museum professionals is a little hard to say all the time and to write down. So EXOs just, we kind of think of it as like external operative or something. You know, somebody from the outside is coming in to help us.
Anjali Grantham is curator of collections at the Baranoff Museum in Kodiak. Located inside the Russian-American magazine, a two-story log structure built in 1808, it houses a treasure trove of colonial Alaska history. Grantham had some experience preserving and caring for objects prior to working for the Baranoff Museum. Still, she says the opportunity to learn from the staff at the Alaska State Museum is unique.
This is what they do. You know, they conserve objects and they create these really amazing storage solutions for fragile objects of many different types of materials. It's kind of like now I'm here under the tutelage of masters.
Grantham and Malvich were the fourth group of EXOs to visit Juneau as part of the project. Carley says he works with between 60 and 70 museums around the state. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. Stay tuned for National Public Radio and have a wonderful morning.